Blog Talk Radio. Anyway, yeah, it's been a really interesting week. very interesting week, some of the things that have taken place. And I just tell you guys to keep up with the news, pay attention to what's going on. Again, I put something the other day about Creflo Dollar, you know, making a little quip saying, I wonder how Father's Day weekend was going at his house. Should be interesting. The SCLC issued an edict, if you will, saying that the deputies were wrong to have arrested Creflo's daughter. And I posted that on my page. And, again, I feel bad for the young lady because it's like all eyes are on her. It's as though the weight of the world is now on her shoulders because everybody is blaming her for his actions. And that's what I don't seem to understand. You're blaming her for his actions, and people are taking up for him. And, again, you know, me personally, I don't believe in any type of corporal punishment whatsoever. But not so much. Anyway, let's get into this a little bit, and let's define some of these terms here. Stockholm Syndrome, there are a few different definitions out there, but basically it refers to a group of psychological symptoms that occur in some persons in a captive or hostage situation in which they start taking sympathy upon the people that have held them captive or have held them hostage. And that goes outside even of just a, you know, hostage type of situation. You know, I've seen people who are not necessarily held hostage or kidnapped physically. Someone can have you arrested developmentally. I mean, they can have your mind, they can have your emotions all tied in. You know, there are different ways in which you can look at that. And so I just encourage you guys to go out there and do some more reading on Stockholm Syndrome. And we're going to get into that a little bit more, but I want to define the terminology before we move forward. Because as we move along, you'll see that some of the lines are blurred. And we'll be talking about one thing, but it can fit into several different categories. Let's define bully. And a bully can be a person who uses strength or power to harm or intimidate those who are weaker. It can also say use superior strength or influence to intimidate someone, typically to force him or her to do what one wants. And, you know, there are plenty of more definitions out there, but those are the ones that we generally are familiar with, you know, just so many different definitions. So basically being mean or cruel and overbearing to someone who you perceive as being smaller or weaker, which is not necessarily the case because I've seen some bullies get bullied by the person they were trying to bully. So it's interesting how that can sometimes turn around. And emotional abuse, you know, and one of the simplest definitions for emotional abuse or emotionally abusive behavior is anything that intentionally hurts the feelings of another person. And, again, you know, some of the things that I've seen, especially over the past few years, especially on Facebook, I've never seen anything like that in my life. Some of the status updates, some of the pictures, some of the memes, it's just amazing. It's just amazing. A hotbed for just a bunch of foolishness, and we have to do better. We have to do better as people, as individuals. It's just interesting. Yes, one in the chat room called bullies the P word, saying that the word is interchangeable. So it's just interesting. It's a bunch of that happening, especially, like I said, on Facebook. When I see some of the status updates, I'm just absolutely amazed at how some of these things are allowed to happen. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about Stockholm Syndrome here. Now, Stockholm Syndrome, you know, it's interesting. That's the psychological term for basically, you know, loving your abuser. And it happens all the time. I mean, you know, examples of some people who are in situations like that, abused children, battered, abused women, and in some cases men, you know, we can't leave them out. Prisoners of war, members of cults, incest victims, criminal hostage situations, concentration camp prisoners, and controlling and intimidating relationships in which, you know, the person is treating you horribly, but you end up trying to be nice, you end up trying to make excuses for them. You know, some examples of that will be positive feelings by the victim toward the abuser or controller, or negative victims by the victim toward the family, friends, or authorities trying to rescue and support them, or when they're released, support of the abuser's reasons and behaviors, positive feelings by the abuser toward the victim, supportive behaviors by the victim at times, helping the abuser, which is interesting, and the inability to engage in behaviors that may assist in their release or detachment because, you know, again, with that young lady in California that had been held captive for well over, I believe it was over 20 years. I don't really have all the information behind that, but people were asking why didn't she leave? She even had two children by, you know, the pedophile that kidnapped her. And people were trying to say, well, she wanted to stay. She had opportunities to leave, but she stayed. And, you know, here's an example right here, the inability to engage in behaviors that may assist in their release or detachment. You know, basically he had gotten inside of her head. He had gotten inside of her head. You know, she probably didn't believe that there were people coming to, you know, rescue her, that anyone cared. It could be just any number of reasons. And we have to do better with reaching out to people and letting them know that we care about them. And in situations where you see, you know, bullying or abuse of some sort, we have to start speaking out about it. We definitely have to start speaking out about it. And regarding to, you know, the Stockholm Syndrome, you know, there's no real clear-cut list. But, you know, it happens. It happens all the time. You know, another example here is with a bank robbery involving hostages. After, you know, the people have been terrorized by the bank robbers, you know, the police may turn around and shoot or wound or hurt the bank robber. And after the bank robber is shot and it hits the floor, you may have people trying to pick him up and hold them up and try to, I don't know, it's just, it's interesting, you know, it happens. It happens. And many times people don't even realize what's happening. The length of time that you're exposed to the person can also be one of the factors in which controls or the person's thinking. You know, it's just interesting, but right here it says it has been found that four situations or conditions that are present that serve as a foundation for the development of Stockholm Syndrome. The four situations can be found in hostage, severe abuse, and abusive relationships. And it says here the presence of a perceived threat to one's physical or psychological survival and a belief that the abuser would carry out the threat. The second one would be the presence of a perceived small kindness from the abuser to the victim. The third one would be isolation from perspectives other than those of the abuser. And the fourth would be the perceived inability to escape the situation. Okay, so, you know, the situations can be really dicey, but again, you know, looking at these different points here, you know, isolated from perspectives other than those of the abuser. They will have you thinking that their way of thinking is the absolute, you know, end-all, be-all, and that what no one's going to believe you, what anyone else thinks is irrelevant because most people are going to agree with them, and there's nothing that you can do about it. They totally try to isolate your way of thinking, your way of interacting with people who may have perspectives other than the one that they have. Perceived inability to escape the situation. I can give a couple of examples of that, of these four situations, and it's outside of a hostage situation, but it's geared more towards abusive relationships. I remember attending this one church in particular, and the pastor would always say, you know, same thing I'm saying over here, they're going to say over there, so you may as well stay here. And you've been a member of this church, and they're going to just turn you around and send you back here anyway, because they're going to reject you because our teaching over here, or our belief systems over here, or our culture over here is in conflict with theirs. So why go over there and embarrass yourself? Just stay here. Or basically everyone else is wrong and they're right. Again, you know, I was talking about how, you know, this can be very cultic as well. And it's just interesting. Again, psychological abuse, you know, is tied into this. And basically, when someone has your mind psychologically, it can be hard to break from that. And most people are very much aware of that. They know if they can control your mind, they can control your thinking, they can control some of your actions. So I just tell people to be careful, because I've seen situations in which a person has been bullied and by a big bully, and they turned around and they would react to the situation, not realizing that by reacting and responding, that the bully is now aware that he or she controls that individual. And it's just interesting. But, yeah, you know, we can talk about bullying right now, because that's something that's been happening quite a bit. I have a question in the chat room. It says, but no, your situation did not inspire this topic. Not at all. There are a variety of different situations that I've seen, not only in the news, but again, I've seen some of this on the internet, in which people are relentlessly, you know, trying to convey their opinions on others while trying to basically control the other individual so that they won't see any other perspective, trying to convince the person that their perspective is the only one that matters. So, no, your situation didn't inspire this topic per se, but, you know, it happens. Things like this happen, and we have to learn how to recognize it. We also have to learn how to stop it. And so, again, going back to bullying, you know, bullying is an act of repeated aggressive behavior in order to intentionally hurt another person, whether it's physical or mental or emotional. And it happens quite a bit, especially, you know, some of the things I've seen on Facebook. The cyberbullying is out of control. And people tend to think that because you're using a pseudonym on Facebook that you can't be found. Yes, you can. All of that information is recorded. And, you know, if the person is making threats or you're being harassed by a bully, all you have to do is make a police report. And if you decide to pursue it, the courts will issue a subpoena to Twitter or Facebook, and at that time they will have to release your IP address, in which another subpoena would have to be issued for the cable company to release the name and information of that particular person, and then you can pursue criminal and in some cases civil damages, you know, against that person for the distress or whatever that they may have caused you. Because people need to understand that you just can't go around mistreating people and saying whatever you want, you know, that's illegal on the internet, and thinking that they can give, you know, get away with it. An example of cyberbullying would be like the young people. You know, there have been several cases, you know, in the news, and I've posted them, in which kids were bullied at school, you know, physically, you know, face-to-face. And what happened was people would create the MySpace pages back in the day. Remember when the one mother created the MySpace page to intentionally harass a young lady who was her daughter's competitor? I've seen it happen on Facebook. People would create pages or make posts about individuals, and the other people would just, you know, other people in that group, you know, again, groupthink, mob mentality, they would just fall in line, and the harassment would just turn vicious, get out of line. We've had young people committing suicide over this. Look at the different examples in which you've seen people actually get into physical altercations because of Facebook and MySpace and different messages left on it. It was a horrible video on this one website that I won't mention, because I don't go to that website, but the video was all over Facebook. I had no choice but to see it, even though no one made me click play. But it was a Twitter beef, and, you know, Twitter is horrible. But Twitter beef, and the young lady went to the girl's house, and literally they fought. They fought over words, you know, being spoken on Twitter. It's horrible. Horrible. I mean, I don't even know what to say behind that. You know, people not learning how to control their emotions, not knowing how to talk. And, I mean, there are times in which you will try to talk to someone who's harassing you or bullying you, and to no avail. And so what do you do? Me personally, it's easier to ignore them, not give them the attention, not feed into it. You know, this question here says, how does a grown person allow a complete stranger to bully them from a computer miles away? Again, if a person is emotionally immature or stunted in some kind of way, then, again, if they don't know how to deal with their emotions, not everybody, you know, has had the opportunity to process or have certain thought processes, if they don't know how to handle it. And again, you never know what someone else is dealing with, what they're going through. People have different issues. There are people out there that have mental health issues. And if they're already dealing with that and they're constantly being bombarded with harassing messages, whether it's messages, phone calls, what have you, you know, people tend to snap. People tend to snap. I'm not making excuses for, you know, the behavior on any side, but, you know, my thing is, what is the mindset of the person doing the bullying? You know, are things, you know, in your life so bad that you're that miserable that you're trying to project that misery onto someone else? You know, what's really happening? And, you know, another question is there a fine line between cyberbullying and cyber altercations, and how much of this is victim and culprit versus two people fighting online? Well, again, why should two people be fighting online? If we're supposed to be adults, why can these people not call or sit down and reasonably talk to each other about the situation? This is why I am upset with you, and this is what you did, and this is how you made me feel. And give the person a chance to respond. That's called maturity. But not everybody possesses that. And, you know, cyber altercations, you know, going back and forth, if someone says something, you respond. And, you know, that happens. But when it gets to the point where you start having people just totally putting someone else down, making snide comments and, you know, directed at, you know, an individual or certain individuals. And then, again, that mob mentality. So you may have five or six of their friends, you know, join in, because I've had people try to pull me into situations. They'll call me up, oh, I'm fighting with so-and-so, blah, 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 come and say something. And I absolutely refuse to do it, because that's not my altercation. But I will tell the person if they're wrong, and in the majority of cases, I'm like, ignore it. Ignore it. It's not going to solve anything. Why can't you sit down like mature adults and actually talk about these particular issues? And, you know, just sitting here, and it can just be a number of different situations. And Mario says these youngsters and some grown people go off, and he sees people using derogatory terms to describe other people, you know, bitches and hoes and all the nasty back and forth on Facebook. And you should see Twitter. Facebook has absolutely nothing on Twitter. I've seen some really nasty altercations on Twitter. And again, you know, I question the emotional stability and maturity of the people involved. We have a call here on 480. Did we ask who's calling?
Yes, my name is Travis.
Hi, Travis. How are you?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
I'm well. Thank you kindly. I appreciate it. All right, so our show today is on Stockholm Syndrome, emotional abuse, and bullying. Would you like to contribute to the conversation?
I absolutely would. I'd like to add another dimension to the conversation because I was recently thinking about Stockholm Syndrome, and I was pondering it for a while, you know, a few months or weeks or what have you. And what came to my mind is that there seems to be a complete and absolute parallel between a single person experiencing Stockholm Syndrome and a group of people, a large mass of people going through the exact same circumstance or having the exact same reaction to being colonized. And I was wondering if that parallel has been something you would consider, because every single nuance that occurs with Stockholm Syndrome occurs on a massive level, on a large scale, with groups of people who have been colonized. So with African Americans in this country, we began to perceive the world through the eyes of those who oppressed us, identical to what occurs with a single person in Stockholm Syndrome. We begin to empathize with the oppressor to the extent where we even celebrate their Independence Day. And a lot of us walk around and have no idea the significance of, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation or Juneteenth, which, you know, we've just passed, or which we're, you know, having right now. But I've never heard anyone speak to the parallel between a single person experiencing Stockholm and all the different things that go on with that in comparison to a group of people, a large group of people experiencing the exact same identical thing. And, you know, so is that something that you've ever pondered? Is that something you can speak to or kind of...
Oh, I understand exactly where you're coming from. And if you were to see my notes, I did put that in the notes and wasn't quite sure if I was going to touch that subject. But, yeah, definitely, you know, you can see some of the parallels there, you know, if you did, like, a comparative analysis with the information on Stockholm Syndrome and what happens when, you know, people are colonized or, you know, forced into some type of indentured servitude. And when I say indentured servitude, I'm not only talking about the Africans that were slaves. A lot of people do not realize that Indians were once slaves, and there were also some white people who were once slaves, and, you know, other cultures as well. And, but, you know, getting back to what you're talking about, yes, you know, I would say that that is applicable because, again, whenever they would say or do anything that did not fall in line with what they had been forced to believe or forced to think, then they would get beat. They would get beat, or they would be abused emotionally or psychologically. And again, if you look at what has happened in our community, it's a perpetual cycle. We're still dealing with that now. And, you know, that goes into another area of self-hate. I see a lot of self-hate in our community. And again, going back to the horrible examples that I see on Facebook and Twitter, there's some of the things that I see people saying about each other and saying about, you know, their respective cultures. And it's just horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And then some of us can't understand why other cultures reject us or other cultures mock and ridicule us. But, you know, we're somewhat giving them permission, you know, and for those that are out there that are silent, that said, I haven't said anything. Sometimes silence equals tacit agreement. And
absolutely.
We need to understand.
Absolutely.
I didn't hear you there.
I was just saying, absolutely, I agree with you completely.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we need to call it out. We need to call it out. But, again, and this is where some of the, where it gets a little tricky. There are times when you may or you will call it out. However, then the attention falls on you. Because I've seen that happen, which someone will basically call someone out for making these types of comments or calling someone out for those, for their actions. And then all of a sudden, they no longer are attacking the victim. Now they're attacking the person who attempted to rescue the victim.
Right.
And so that's what causes people not want to speak out, to not want to speak out. And basically, you know, what do? This is the reason why many people close their eyes and shut their ears and say they don't want to hear anything about it and that they want nothing to do with the situation because, you know, they fear that the people are going to turn on them. And we've seen many different cases of that happen. It's just interesting. I'll give you an example. Down in Florida, the pastor, you know, basically he went to jail. He went to jail because he had a relationship with a young lady. He was a pedophile, and he impregnated the young lady. The young lady's parents turned against her. The church turned against her. He denied it. He kept denying it. The young lady refused to give up the baby. She refused to abort the child. They did the DNA testing on the baby after, you know, it was born and found out that the pastor was the father of the child, and this was the pastor of a megachurch now. And, again, that they turned against that young lady. They totally, you know, betrayed her trust, everything. And she had the baby, and her parents were also put in jail, as well as the pedophile pastor. And what has happened since then is the pedophile pastor has been released from jail, went to a church, you know, within a mile or two of his old church, and they accepted him, and he started there as like a teacher, a Bible school teacher, Sunday school teacher, and they elevated him to the role of pastor because they figured he turned that one church into a mega church so he can turn this church into a mega church while betraying the trust of every child in that church, basically, because what happened was by him being a registered sex offender, he's not able to be around children. So what they did is they banned children from the church. Now, on one hand, we may think that's a good thing because the children, you know, will not have to be, you know, inundated with the doctrine and a dogma. But on the other hand, look at the mentality. In order to keep a pedophile in their pulpit, they are banning the children from the adult church. What is that saying about the mindset? And we see things like this every day. Let's talk about Creflo again. Again, you know, I don't believe in corporal punishment whatsoever. And for him to be a pastor, you know, a public figure, you know, someone of his stature, and especially since I believe he has his degree in counseling of some sort, he's been trained how to talk to people. So why couldn't he talk to his own child? And what's happening is, you know, again, using a biblical term, it's like they're using that child as a sacrificial lamb. So they're sacrificing that young lady's emotional and psychological well-being in an effort to protect the pastor, who should not have put his hands on her like that. You choked your child, well, allegedly choked your child. You allegedly threw her to the ground. But yet the majority of the people in his church and the majority of the comments that I'm seeing are, he had that right. With the SCLC, they just declared that the police, that the deputies should not have arrested Creflo and that he had a right to discipline his child. Where is this mentality coming from? You know, where is this mentality coming from? And, you know, we have to do better because to me it's like people are justifying this type of behavior, you know, with the child abuse and the domestic abuse. They're justifying it. So, I mean, how do we get away from that? How do we, you know, again, they're projecting the blame from the abuser to this child. This is a 15-year-old young lady. She's a 15-year-old young lady. She indicated in a 911 call that this was not the first time that she had been in that type of situation with her father and that she felt threatened. So what was she supposed to do in that situation? You know, that's the question. Was she supposed to just sit there and take it as she may have possibly done in the past? And, again, it didn't seem to have fazed, you know, Taffy or the 19-year-old daughter. So, again, you know, what's really happening in that household? That's, you know, again, I don't live in that household, and they will be the first one to tell me that it's none of my business. And, you know, again, you know, I'm not feeding or financing any of them, so, you know, I can kind of see where they're coming from. But when this type of situation is exposed to the world, then, yeah, you know, we have a right to say something about it. He's a, you know, public figure. But not only that, we don't want other people to get the idea that it's okay to choke, you know, teenagers and throw them to the ground. They're people. You know, I remember that show from way back in the day, kids are people too. Yes, they are. They're human beings. And they have feelings and thoughts just like the rest of us. What are we going to do about this culture of abuse?
Am I still on?
Mm-hmm, yeah, you're here.
I wanted to make a comment, and it's kind of to address the question, how do we get out of this? And it's a pretty complex, you know, situation, which, of course, warrants a complex response. But I think one of the more fundamental ways is that we have to understand, identify who we are as a people. Because when you don't understand who you are, you begin to adopt cultural norms that are outside of your realm of, you know, outside of who you are and where you come from. And so now we see certain types of behavior, mental health issues and things of that nature that historically were not issues that we dealt with or that we had to deal with, you know.
Exactly.
And I think the more we assimilate into a society, we begin to manifest within our communities and families the same issues we see at large. And I don't think, you know, that whole Stockholm syndrome thing where people don't want to identify themselves outside of their oppressor, if you will. They don't want to identify themselves outside of, you know, what's acting against them. And so only until we kind of begin to – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I have been a staunch advocate for mental health care in this country, and a lot of the ills that, you know, belabor our community, you know, they are rooted in our mental health care, and these are issues that definitely that need to be explored, and they need to be, you know, confronted. Because, you know, there are a lot of issues that we've been passing down, and we definitely need to address them. And with the mental health care, I posted an article about that earlier this week, that the mental health care programs are being cut left and right. So, you know, the already meager programs they had out there, they're cutting the funding for that in Chicago. We've been having protests at some of the, you know, mental health care facilities that service, you know, economically and educationally disadvantaged areas. And, you know, they're cutting them, they're reducing the staff, it's been crazy. But if you look at society, you know, these problems are being exacerbated and they're increasing, they're swelling. We have Raina on the line. Raina, are you there?
Hey, Kim, what's going on?
Hey, Raina. Raina is our resident neural sciences here. It's like, but, yeah, you know, we're talking about mental health care, and, you know, the young man was bringing up about how some of the issues that we're dealing with, you know, definitely are tied to mental health care and how we need to deal with those issues. And I agree with him 100%. And we have to find a way to dispel the stigma. And this is why I talk about mental health care so much, because a lot of people do not get the help that they need because, you know, mental health care has been stigmatized. The only reason why they're starting to slowly move away from that in certain, you know, cultures or elements of culture is because they found a way to monetize it. You know, I was talking, you know, on the last show about how at one point many of these churches would tell people, oh, you're crazy, but, you know, we can lay our hands on you and we can get those evil spirits and demons out of you. And they would discourage
Absolutely.
People from getting the help that they need and discourage them from taking their medicines until they realize that they could create a new industry behind it. And so now you have life coaches, you have Christian counselors, and, you know, different other titles out there in which they're able to bill Medicare, Medicaid, and, you know, in some cases insurance companies, and they've created an industry. They've created schools to train these people, and it's just absolutely amazing what's happening out there, which is another reason why say we need to abolish faith-based initiative, because it's only going to increase. We tell people, pay attention. But, yeah, you know, again, with the young man there, you know, I absolutely agree with what he had to say there. We need to confront it. We need to deal with it.
Yeah. The only thing I took sort of issue with what he was saying is that somehow abuse or other undesirable behaviors are somehow the result of us assimilating our oppressor's culture, as though abuse is not something that is universal to the human condition. Like, you cannot find examples of abusive behavior in, you know, Africa pre-colonially or, you know, what have you, because we don't know who we are. We abuse people, and that has nothing to do with it. But, yes, you're right. We do need to somehow, you know, work to reduce the stigma of dealing with mental health issues and also teach people other methods of, you know, implementing discipline, because sometimes I don't really think it's so much that some of these parents are mentally ill. I think they really believe on a certain level that they're doing what's best for their children. They just don't know. They just don't know anything else to do. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, they don't know any better. They have not been offered an alternative. And
right.
so, they,
and I'm not talking about Creflo, because you pretty much know
right.
when you bend your daughter over a table, you're doing something wrong. You know, there's something wrong when you mention a daughter over the table. There's no excuse for that. But some parents, you know, they may spank their kids, like, they maybe have spanked their kids a handful of times over the course of their life. But, you know, maybe there's that one time they got out of control. Or maybe they just didn't know anything else to do but spanking. Maybe there was another method they could have used that was way more effective. You know, but we have to teach people those things. You know, because a lot of times people just get into this mode where they think, well, you know, because my grandmother did it and my mom did it and I turned out okay, more or less. You know what I mean? that somehow means that the method that they're using is valid. And that's just not the case.
Right. But, you know, I want to address something real quick that the young man said earlier when he was talking about the colonization, if you will. And, you know, the part that I agreed with was when, you know, the Africans were brought to this country as slaves. And, again, Africans weren't the only ones that were slaves. They had Indians that were slaves. They had whites that were slaves. And not just in this country, but other countries.
And they weren't the only ones that were ever enslaved, on, you know, outside of
exactly.
the U.S. either. You know
exactly.
what I mean? Especially outside the U.S.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
and the thing is that they were beaten into submission. You know, were beaten into submission in certain areas. They were told what to think, how certain things were supposed to be done. And, you know, again, we have to take personal accountability and responsibility as to where we are now, because in many cases we know better. But there are still some people out there that do not know better, and that's the reason why I feel that some of us are compelled to get out here and to teach people better, to disseminate
mm-hmm.
the information and the education. But, you know, it doesn't matter how much information and education we have and we try to share that with people and explain it, there will still be people who reject that.
Okay.
No matter what we say, no matter what we do. But we can't necessarily blame everything that's happening in our communities now on slavery. Okay?
Absolutely.
You can't blame everything. And then also not everything that's good came from Africa.
Especially because there's a whole legacy that happened after slavery that really I think is much more important to focus on. You know, the legacy of discrimination, you know, and pretty much every way, you know, level of life. You know, I think, you know, none of us can really argue that we're more affected somehow by what happened, you know, nearly 400 years ago than we are by what immediately has taken place afterwards, which is, you know, things like stop and frisk and, you know, educational discrimination, you know, lack of economic opportunity, political disenfranchisement, you know what I mean, and all these other things. We're much
right.
more affected by those things. Those things have a, you know, they're closer to us. So I think when we start talking about what's wrong with our community, we have to start with those things. You know, and after we've exhausted those things, perhaps we can get to this idea of post-traumatic slave syndrome, which I'm not sure really applies. But, you know, maybe it does. But let's deal with the things that have, you know, you have to work scientifically, right? You have to eliminate variables You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? As you come
right.
across them and try to eliminate extraneous variables. Okay, it's like I'm going to test this to see if this is the, you know, the main effector. You know? Okay,
right.
This wasn't the main effector. Let me go down the list. Let's try to eliminate the effect of this thing and see if this is the main effect. You know what I mean? You just go down the list and be strategic about it. But I don't think you're going to be able to prove that we're somehow suffering from post-traumatic slave disorder. I'm sorry.
That's been going around for a while, people talking about
really
that. I have yet to read the young lady's book, but I think I'm going to try to download the e-book and actually read it to see where she's coming from. Again, you know, I believe in personal accountability and personal responsibility, and someone, you know, said, you know, in the chat room, he said that we cannot think that any of the institutions, you know, out here involving other cultures will ever help any of us. And, again, it goes back to we have now a $1.1 trillion spending base in this community, in our particular community, you know. And, again, we can take some of those monies, again, invest them in businesses, but also invest them in programs like this so that we can help each other get help. And, you know, it's just it's amazing. You know, we can't help ourselves. You know, we have
yes,
Mario
absolutely.
On the line here. Mario, are you
hey,
there?
Hey, Mario.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hello, Mario.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mario.
Go ahead. Oh.
Yeah.
I talk with a lot of people about certain things like this, especially when it comes to what has been referred to as corporal punishment and whatnot. And, you know, I grew up in a household, you know, myself and my siblings, we were all spanked or whooped or whatever. My grandmother was, I imagine she was, and, you know, so on and so forth and everything. And then originally, I looked at it as though I didn't turn out that bad. You know, saying my brother and my sister and my mom generally ain't shit, but, you know, it's a matter of mentality, I guess, or whatever you took from whatever discipline you were given. And then when I see all this stuff about Creflo, and I see how many people are defending the actions, you know what I'm saying, and whatnot, and thinking that violence is a part of a child rearing, that when a child gets a bit unruly, you now have, it's almost like you have now given that permission to that parent the permission to go off the deep end and choke the shit or beat the shit out of that kid. You know, I look at that, you know what I'm saying, the Stockholm Syndrome aspect of the whole thing, and it really trips me out how we condition ourselves to believe that we are deserving of the pain that we experience. You know, I'm reading about slavery, and some religious people saying that one guy said slavery was a curse on us for not obeying God's laws. And you're reading the Bible and say how this person was punished, how this person was punished, how this person was tortured, how this entire city was destroyed and everything. It's like the human experience, not exclusive to Africans, has been about you deserve this pain for some reason. And it's kind of tripped our mind into believing that, you know, seeing this person hit this person means that this person deserves to be beaten the hell out of and stuff like that. You got executions and lethal injections and stuff like that. We really, our entire human society, the world is kind of screwed up in which we base our learning experiences off the pain we experience. I've kind of really rambled here. But we really just kind of tricked ourselves in believing that pain is the way we learn. Pain is the way we you process the information that you're given.
Mario,
really
you brought up a really you bring up a really good point because I've had this conversation with a lot of people regarding the way that religious people, particularly Christians, view capital punishment or corporal punishment, and you know. If you really study Christianity, you really realize that pain is a part of the human condition, the way that Christianity sees the world. And, you know, but that pain is never as intense or as worth or as painful or as worth as much as the pain that was supposedly suffered by Jesus Christ. I mean, isn't
yeah.
that crazy? I mean, there's
yep.
so many stories that, you know, you can talk about people who've been tortured in unspeakable ways, you know, women who've been raped and all of these things, and all they can ever say is, well, you know, at least you didn't suffer the way our Lord suffered.
Oh,
yeah.
And you know, I have a question right there, because, you know, yeah, you hear that all the time and you see it, and, you know, they have different methodologies on which they can get the victim to blame themselves for being victimized in some way or another,
right.
whether it was God's
right.
doing or they didn't pray enough or what have you. So I guess my question is, and this is just something out of curiosity, and I don't really expect anyone to be able to answer this, but let's just say hypothetically, if these people were to stop projecting, you know, that blame onto God or the devil or even to themselves and actually blame the, you know, the oppressor or blame the perpetrator, if they were to ever fully grasp and understand that they were truly victimized, what mechanisms do we have in place to help them? Because I believe with some people, that is the only way that they will not have a mental breakdown of some sort. So what do we do in a situation like that? Which is why, you know, it's a real fine line there, because there are some people that actually need to believe that it was God that did that to them and not the person who did it, because they will snap. So, you know, as more people become more enlightened, I believe we're going to start having more situations in which, you know, people are going to you know, we're just going to have more problems. But in that case, I mean, again, that's why I advocate mental health care. And it's just, it's amazing, because I've seen people who have retrospected on situations and they had been blaming themselves for years only to realize that it was never their fault. It was never in God's will. That was not supposed to happen that way. And the person who mistreated them or abused them was wrong. And I've seen some of these people end up in mental wards.
Right.
You know.
I find it to be kind of, you know, just like I said, you know, we've kind of, human beings have conditioned themselves that pain is a part of the whole experience of being human, especially when it comes to religiosity and stuff like that. I mean, you have people who still reenact the entire, you know, saying Jesus crucifixion, just for the hell of it, you know. And I often think, you know, along the lines of what you're saying, you know, when we talk about religion and everything, it's almost like they've been plugged in, people have been plugged into the matrix. How would they react if they were unplugged from the matrix? When they find out that their entire world has been an illusion and everything is not as they thought it was, would they be happy or would they be devastated that everything they knew was not the way it should have been? When you find out that your father, who you've looked up to and everything like that, is actually this monstrous human being, how does that affect you? You know, people, when it comes to the people they love and they care about, find all kinds of ways to defend those actions that they would not excuse in other people. Choking your daughter is okay for Creflo because of him, but if I were to choke a random woman on the street, you know what I'm saying, a lot of those women would not stand for that. I'm not Creflo.
Exactly. And what happens is with people like Creflo, especially if it's a man of stature or even a woman of stature, because, you know, women are known to be abusive as well, you know. And, you know, if it's a person of stature, a public figure, a person that's revered by many, again, you know, I've seen, you know, some people, you know, especially with this latest example, they're siding with the perpetrator. And, you
right.
know, they're making
right.
excuses for him. They're blaming the children. And, again, as far as I'm concerned, they're complicit. They are complicit. They may as well just walk up to her and choke her and throw her on the ground too, because that's what they're doing every time they give her, they mean mug her or they say something negative. All of these articles and all of these different groups coming out in defense of him. Now, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what happened, but if that little girl got fed up enough to call the police, something is wrong. And
yeah, but here's my thing. It doesn't matter what she did, because nothing that she did could justify him choking her and bending her over a table. That is just ridiculous.
No.
I agree with you. Go ahead.
I mean, anything short of her trying to kill him does not justify him putting his hands around her throat.
Exactly. But my point to all of that is, you know, you have these different groups coming out, you know, for him and against the deputies. But in essence, they're still indicting that little girl because she had to sit there. She had to deal with it. And I can only imagine now that particular child of Creflo, we need to keep an eye on her at least for the next 10 years. And the reason why I say that, I'm curious as to how her life will turn out. Is she going to deal with, you know, addiction issues? Is she going to end up being with a young man that's abusive? And, again, she does end up with a young man that's abusive. She's already been given the example that, you know, being handled or manhandled like that is okay. Okay?
Right.
So if a man turns around and manhandles her like that, what is Creflo going to say? Will he have the right to get angry when he's already shown the world that it's okay to mistreat this young lady like that? You know, I mean, seriously, you know,
right. What's
going to happen to her? So, you know, I think we just need to kind of keep an eye on her, and I wish her the best. And it's just, you know, the members of the church already know how this works because I've been in churches,
right.
I've seen situations like that. I've been in a situation like that. And when I came out against the abuser, it wasn't sexual abuse or anything like that. It was more emotional. When I came out against the abuser, the people of the church got mad at me. And I'm like, how are you getting mad at me? Because I won't let him treat me like that. Because when he tried to bully me, I turned around and showed him what a bully really was. And so, you know,
right.
You know, how is that my fault? Because I defended myself. Am I supposed to just sit there and take it? So,
yep, you were
know,
supposed to turn the other cheek.
Yeah, turn the other cheek, yeah, so they just slap me on the other side, right?
And right.
It's just absolutely amazing. But then in some cases, I've seen it in different churches in which people would agree with the victim that it should not have happened, but yet they're not willing to stand up and speak out because they know that they will now turn into the victim if they say anything. And again, it goes back to this distorted definition of loyalty, which I am not understanding, you know, in our community. But, you know, again, you know, they will betray their children, friends, and family, whomever, to stay in good standing, especially when it's someone that's a public figure like Creflo. You know, so there are people in his, you know, inner circle, who I believe are against what he did, but they can't say anything because they want to stay in good standing with him because it's amazing. It's amazing.
You know.
Go ahead, Maria.
You know, it's exactly along the lines of what you're saying. I mean, it's interesting how if you post on Facebook, man choke woman, all females going to be okay with that. They're not going to be okay with that. A lot of males are not going to be okay with that. But you say, oh, it's his daughter. Oh, okay, cool. Well, you know, if my daughter was going off at the mouth, you know what I'm saying, I would go off the deep end too. Now, in that regard, my sister, she's probably the most evil people I've met at times, man. I mean, if you really need to be pissed off one day, get into an altercation with her, especially if you talk to her about stuff that's private and now it's being thrown back at you, just so she can win whatever little argument she's making. My grandmother helped raise all of us now, helping her raise her kids. She has exasperated my grandmother to the point of almost going off like Creflo. I've seen it happen. I don't know the young girl's character, but I do know that she's still wrong, you know, and you got a man who I'm pretty sure he's a good deal bigger than his daughter, and he's a pastor on top of that and everything like that, you have to lead by example. I don't think leading by example includes choking your daughter. And I don't understand how anybody could, it's amazing how they do the detachment phase, though. It's amazing how the Stockholm Syndrome is so ingrained in them that they do a detachment, the same thing they did with Eddie Long. If it's not Eddie Long, it's wrong. But if it's him, it's okay. There's a reason why he did it. Therefore, it's okay in some way. You know, it's okay that Kerflo choked his own daughter because it's his own daughter. She had a lot of mouth. She deserved it. But if it was a random guy, no name, you know nothing about this guy, choked this young girl, oh, everybody has a problem with that. Technically, it's the same thing. As a matter of fact, it's even worse because that is his own son.
You know,
I
wanted to say I have a personal experience that I had several years ago whereby me and my ex-wife were not together. We're divorced, of course, so she mixed with my ex. But my daughter, at that time, was 18, 17 years old. She had gotten into an altercation with my ex-wife, which resulted in her getting about 15 or 16 stitches in her head, you know. I live in another state, and I was extremely livid when I found out about the circumstance because I had to fly her out to live with me and, try to deal with the whole stress of that situation and understand what occurred and so forth. But the long and short of it is that by the time it was all done, there were no charges that were ever pressed. I was never contacted by the county attorney to find out, you know, well, what do I want to do about it as another parent. I was completely marginalized. So not only was my daughter victimized, but I, as the other parent, was victimized as mm-hmm. well, because I felt like I had no say. It wasn't an issue of, I've been a present father, paid more than enough in child support, and was always there. I've always been there. So it wasn't as though I was an absentee father, but when everything happened, I didn't find out until like a week later that the whole thing even occurred, and everyone had my contact information. I was a former law enforcement officer, you know. So I had a deep understanding of how the system was supposed to work, but because my ex-wife was a nurse, they decided, well, we don't want to compromise her employment situation, so we're not going to press this issue any further. And so there was a lot of complexities in that, but basically when it comes to children, they're extra vulnerable because a lot of times, even the child advocate who I spoke with, who I was, you know, voicing my concerns, I was pretty pissed off about it. Even she said that, well, you know, the county attorney doesn't want to pursue this matter, you know. And even though she wanted to, even to some extent, she was even marginalized in that particular case. So
it was
just a very difficult situation. I just had to get past it because I could see that there was nothing going to be done about it. And it wasn't a huge shock to me as a parent because I understand how the system works and all its flaws, but just the fact that my daughter was a minor at the time when the incident occurred, I could just see how vulnerable children are, particularly vulnerable to abuse. And even when they have adults who advocate in their interest, if the party that's supposed to kind of oversee the situation, in this case the courts, if their interests don't align with that of the child, it's a no-win proposition almost.
Exactly. And as you said, you know, you were marginalized because you spoke up. And you're seeing, you know, a lot of different situations just like yours in which the parent will speak up for their child and, you know, report it to the appropriate authorities. Again, you know, you have that, you know, the different lines of people that you have to report the information to, and you have people saying that bullying is normal, or, you know, whatever the situation is. I'm just going to assume that it was bullying, and that that's part of growing up, and that there's nothing they can do, and you should just, you know, allow your children to be children, or allow children to be children. But, you know, when the parent is marginalized, it all boils down to this. My solution to situations like that is, you know, the best way to stop somebody is to hit them in the pocketbook. Have your lawyer write them a letter. I bet you would stop immediately then. Because, go ahead.
I was going to say, I agree with you completely, but that is one of the inadequacies or flaws in the system. You have to have a lot of resources to buy justice, and justice shouldn't be a commodity. It's supposed to guarantee safety and security, you know, liberty and so forth and all those things that they say as a matter of your citizenship. However, if I can't afford to pay an attorney $300, $400, whatever, an hour, then I can't secure my child's interest, you know. And so I agree with you completely. The pocketbook, I threatened to contact newspapers, to contact agencies that you know, support victims and so forth. But basically, I'm not sure that it would have made any difference at all. And that's not to excuse how things turned out, but I'm still not sure that would have made very much difference.
Yeah, you never know. Again, you know, that's how some policies have been affected in different areas. But, yeah, no, it's not a guarantee. You know, even retaining an attorney and, you know, bringing forth civil litigation, that does not, you know, guarantee, you know, any changes. But I will say that it will guarantee getting someone's attention. Okay,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
that's the whole thing. Documenting the situation. We have someone here in the chat room says even teachers do the bullying, and that's true. There have been many examples of that, especially with this one young man that was a special needs child, and his father basically put a recorder on him and recorded the abuse that was taking place at school. But this young lady is saying her son does not salute the flag, and when he does it, he gets detention. And she went to the school to explain the situation, and they tried to make it seem as though she was a bad mother. And I've seen situations like that. I had a situation when I was in school. This was fifth grade. I don't know. Maybe I need to let this go. But I was in fifth grade, the most horrible school year of my life. And I had a teacher. I don't know what this man's problem was, but he treated the whole class badly. But there were certain ones of us that we were just like his special pets. And so, you know, and it was just absolutely amazing. The parents would come up every marking period to complain about this guy, and the principal did nothing. We gave all kinds of examples. We had kids that when they would find out they were being placed in his class would break out into tears because we had already spread the word as to this man's actions, and he was allowed to continue to teach. He was a bully. And, you know, several years later, you know, this was like, you know, after high school, and I had inquired as to what had happened to him, and apparently he was driving down a major highway and had a heart attack and was hit by an 18-wheeler. And you know what? I didn't feel any remorse. Now, I know that may sound horrible to some people, but you really had to see the way that this guy tortured us. It was just horrible. There was this one young lady that was just, you know, she was full-figured, if you will. And whenever she would come into the room and sit in her chair before she would return back from the lavatory or what have you, he would tell the class, when she comes in and sits in her chair, everybody jumps up like it was an earthquake. So he was getting the class to participate in the bullying because he was telling her that she was overweight. And that's just one example. One young lady had, you know, a Jet magazine, and she was showing everybody. And so what he did was he turned around and made it seem as though she only got the Jet magazine for the centerfold. So he was calling her, in essence, you know, a lesbian. And it's just, it was horrible. This guy was absolutely horrible. I don't know, you know, why they don't make these teachers go through psychological testing as well, because it has gotten progressively worse. It is getting, anyway, I'm all off subject. Okay, bringing my issues into it, but it's just, it's amazing. But again, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, vocalizing dissatisfaction would mean we actually would have to do something about it. We would actually have to do something to affect change. So, you know, the status quo would be threatened. And so that means people would be held accountable for their actions. And in some cases, parents are held accountable for the actions of their children. If they're under a certain age and the parent is negligent, they can be held accountable. You see it on some of these court shows in which, you know, the child or the parents of the child are sued because of the, you know, negligence of the parents and the parents being aware of the actions of the children. And, you know, it happens, and we have to do better about it. We have to do better about these things. Yeah, you know, definitely, you know, because, you know, I'm sitting here, and, you know, there are a lot of, you know, I don't know, it's like one of the things, you know, with the emotionally abusive relationship, one of the things that I've seen quite a bit of is gaslighting. So let's just say you question something that someone else has said or done. The perpetrator may turn around and gaslight you and make you feel as though you're the one who's crazy or unstable because you're calling them out for their behavior. And you see the manipulation, and they try to, you know, manipulate people with fear or shame, or they try to undermine this person's confidence, undermine their worthiness or their growth of trust. You know, and it's absolutely amazing, you know, how some of this stuff works. You know, when you have people, you know, making, you know, little comments about, let's just say, you shouldn't, you know, wow, hold on a second, let me see who that is there. But, yes, there are a lot of examples out there as to, you know, what's really happening. And we just need to study more. Again, you know, I definitely advocate for mental health care and people getting the help that they need. We have to stop with the stereotypes. We have to stop, you know, with the stigma, stigmatizing, you know, people having mental health. They need help, and they deserve some understanding and some compassion as well. And, you know, that's the part that we play, you know, not to re-victimize someone that's already a victim. And, you know, the effects can be long-term. You know, there are some people, I mean, some of us, we're still dealing with some of the effects of what happened to us in childhood. It happens, and, you know, we have to learn how to deal with it. I mean, I know I've given an example as to you know, different resources that are out there. I've put the links up before, but there is help out there for you to get physical and mental health care for free or on a sliding scale basis. A lot of people are complaining about the, you know, health care bill passed under this current administration. But in many cases, it's going to open up a lot of different opportunities. And hopefully people will take advantage of that and go out there and get the help that they desperately, desperately need, because, you know, it's only going to get worse. You know, some examples of emotional abuse is the person can use their economic power to control you. So I've seen cases in which, you know, women have had to stay in abusive situations because they didn't have the money to leave. They didn't have the money to take care of themselves, which is why, you know, I'm grateful for domestic violence shelters and, you know, other programs out there that can help these women. And in some cases, men, we can't leave them out, in which they've been able to transition out and into these programs and be able to go on and live a full and productive life. You know, and again, the person threatens to leave knowing that, you know, this person has no viable means to support themselves and, you know, forcing them again into submission. I can give an example of, you know, a situation like that. My sister was married to a gentleman, and, you know, this guy, you know, he grew up with us. He was like our big brother, if you will, because we all kind of grew up together. And my brothers and sisters are considerably older than myself. And basically, you know, they were going through their ups and downs in their relationship. They had been married at that time about 17 years. And she decided she was going to leave him because it was an abusive situation emotionally and physically. You know, we didn't know about everything that was happening because she kept it from us. Well, when she decided that she was done and she was going to leave him, she went to stay with another sister of mine. And he went over there, snatched her, my sister that he was married to, out of the house, beat her in front of my other sister, threw her into the van, because they had a van, and drove off with her, in which he beat her again, and he physically assaulted her. And this particular relative, he's an expert fisherman, if you will, and she said she felt the blade going down the center of her back. He was about to gut her like a fish, but he couldn't do it. He didn't do it. And eventually he brought her back. But by the time he brought her back, the rest of us had been alerted as to what was happening. And at that time, and even now, there we had a very close alliance with that particular police department. When he got there, we just made a phone call. And within, I say, within 30 seconds, it was like 12 squad cars out there. And, you know, he was arrested. He ended up getting 12 years. But that happens. And, you know, again, that's not making any excuses for his behavior or anything that happened, but he got the 12 years. And, you know, since then, you know, they've been able to talk and make some amends. Of course, there are some trust issues there. They're no longer married. They're married to other people, but they can now sit in the same room together because they dealt with those particular issues. And, I mean, it's still more that they need to deal with, but at least they're trying. So, I mean, again, situations like that happen, but we have to basically, you know, we have to be able to go out there and identify the symptoms and identify what's happening, because people are dealing with things when you never know what someone is going through. That's the reason why I try my best to be kind to people. I try my best to be considerate. I try my best to be understanding and compassionate, because you just never know. You know, again, you know, we all tease about how when we were younger and our parents would just look at us a certain way and we would straighten it out. In some cases, that's a sign of, you know, an emotionally abusive relationship, you know, making you afraid by using looks, gestures, or actions, you know, smashing things, controlling you through minimizing, denying, and blaming, making light of the abuse and not taking your concerns about it seriously, continually criticizing you, calling you names, shouting at you. Yeah, it sounds like Facebook and Twitter to me. Emotionally degrading you in private, but acting charming in public. And that's another thing. You know, people will not believe you when you say things about certain people. And, again, they have a public persona, and then they have a personal persona, if you will. I mean, I'm pretty sure that, you know, there are some people out there that have relatives that the family secret is, don't leave your cousins around so-and-so. And, you know, quite a few of us have that one particular crazy uncle that we know not to be alone with, that we know not to leave our children around, just different situations like that. And, you know, again, it's like a big open family secret. Why aren't we talking about these things? Why aren't we making that particular, you know, special relative go and get some help? You know, it's like a running joke in some families, and there's nothing funny about it, because some of these same relatives end up getting to some of these children, and in some cases getting to some of the adults. But in some of these cases, they aren't that crazy. I had a relative that was like that until another relative had a nice long chat with him. Well, we don't have that problem anymore. And so, you know, it happens. It's interesting. Yeah, everybody has a crazy uncle. And, you know, we just need to do something about these particular issues in my particular family. Even if someone is wrong as two left feet, there are certain family members that they will circle the wagons around to protect them. They will rally around that person, right or wrong. And, you know, it's just, it's interesting, because they'll alienate anyone who disagrees with that person or who disagrees with that person's behavior. And the victim is constantly open to re-victimization because, oh, well, so-and-so got away with talking to that person like a dog. Oh, I'm going to do it. And then it just, you know, through each generation. And I just, you know, one particular relative in particular, you know, this person is an outright drunk. And I feel for him. But I blame that on his mother. His mother is harshly critical. She told everyone else that they can do well in life and that they would be successful, but she constantly told her own children that they were stupid and dumb, and no one wanted to hear what they had to say. People didn't see that side of her. They just saw the positive side of her, and it's just, it's horrible. And these people, they don't say anything because they don't believe anyone cares enough to speak up for them. You know, and I just think it's wrong. I just think it's wrong, you know, for you to make someone your personal punching bag. But again, you know, it happens. It happens. You know, another example of that is church. You know, I've seen examples. I've sat through it, and I've seen in which people, you know, the pastor would make the person that he's angry at, he would make them the center of the sermon and, you know, make that person the center of attention. And now this person, again, has, you know, all the people in the church, especially the gossips and the backbiters, turning against them because the pastor was angry at them. And, you know, again, going back to Creflo and his child, you know, there are, I'm more than positive that there are people in that church making snide comments to that young lady. She's 15, people. She's 15, making snide comments to her. And, you know, I've seen comments with people saying she deserved to be beat again because she called the police. And, you know, should people be penalized for not wanting to be victimized? I don't get it. I don't get it. I just feel that we need to do better. We need to do better. We can do better. And, you know, again, it's about education and disseminating information. And we have to do better all the way around, you know, for that. You know, some women and men, they get accustomed to the behavior. And you've heard me say, you know, several times that the dysfunction and the abusive behavior becomes so commonplace that it is deemed normal. And in some cases, we have to go back in and redefine what normal is. Because, again, some of the examples given earlier, you know, you would have people say, well, I was beat, but I turned out okay. Well, no, you didn't. Look at your behavior. Look at how you're, you know, behaving. Look at how you're acting. Look at what you're excusing. No, you didn't necessarily turn out okay. You're making excuses. And it's just, you know, it's interesting. You know, someone put out the other day that you need a license, you know, well, you need to be approved and go through, you know, a process in order to adopt an animal from the Humane Society. You have to go through a process in order to ascertain a license to, you know, get married. But you don't need any training or any license or any type of process in which to have a child. And there are some people that do not need to have, you know, children. And I've seen cases in which, you know, there are people out here who do not need to have children, and they see their children as their personal property to do with as they see fit. Some see their children as their own little indentured servants. I mean, I can give, you know, quite a few examples, but those are not reasons to have children so that you can be lazy and not have to do any housework. That's not a good example to have children. But anyway, giving some more examples for emotionally abusive relationships. Again, humiliating a person in private or public, or withholding approval, appreciation, or affection as punishment. You know that person did a good job, whatever, but because, you know, you're angry, you're trying to punish them, you're withholding it, you know. And it's just, it's we need to do better. We need to work on that. And, you know, some of the results of verbal and emotional abuse, and this came straight from the Center for Relationship Abuse Awareness. And one of it is a distrust of her, his spontaneity, a loss of enthusiasm, an uncertainty about how he or she is coming across, a concern that something is wrong with him or her, an inclination to review incidents with hopes of determining what went wrong, a loss of self-confidence, a growing self-doubt, an internalized critical voice, a concern that he or she isn't happier and ought to be, an anxiety or fear of being crazy, a sense that time is passing and she's missing something, he or she, a desire not to be the way he or she is, or, for example, being too sensitive, a hesitancy to accept his or her perceptions, a reluctance to come to conclusions, a tendency to live in the future, everything will be great when or after, so on and so forth, and a desire to escape or run away, a distrust of future relationships. Wow. You know, those, it's amazing, but we have to definitely do better. We have to learn how to identify these things. We have to learn how to help people, you know, in situations like this, because it's only going to get progressively worse if we continue to allow these things to transpire and to take place. And again, you know, the people that make excuses for the perpetrator or the oppressor, you know, you're complicit. You are complicit in what's happening there. There have been several examples of the years, you know, again, you have Manson and what they did out in California when they, you know, cut that baby fool out of that woman's stomach. And, you know, he still has devout followers. He still has people who will do whatever he tells them to do. He just has to give the word. And that's why he's still in prison and he's not out of, you know, people that are extremely faithful to him. You know, that's how some of these cults are cultivated and how they continue to, you know, have some significance and some bearing. And we have to learn how to identify, you know, what's happening with these particular people. We actually have a call on 512. May I ask who's calling?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes. Let me ask who's calling.
This is Bayou in Austin.
Hey, Bayou, how are you?
Doing good, Kim. How you doing?
Good, dear.
Right, great. I called a couple of weeks ago. Well, not a couple of weeks ago. I guess a month ago about this, mm-hmm. and I discussed it. I'm still kind of upset about it. This happened about 4 years ago, but kind of leading into my example of what I see as Stockholm Syndrome. My ex-wife is, I don't know if I should call her a victim or what have you, but she's still at the church. She's still at the church we used to go to. And basically, she started going to that church. It was a situation where we were receiving marriage counseling from this pastor, and the guy ended up, I guess he ended up sleeping with her because our son comes to me one day, because we were separated at the time, and he tells me that he saw pastor's shoes at the front door, and before he'd and the pastor didn't live with us. He was married. He and I wasn't staying there either. This was his mother and our daughter and them staying together in an apartment. So long and short of it, the boy comes to me and tells me he saw the shoes by the front door before he went to school one morning. And he went to go tell his mother goodbye for school before he walked out. And she refused to open the door on the basis of her being in there busy or whatever. He said he can hear something in there. It sounded like his mother was jumping up and down in the bed. Come to the end of the story, basically I try to confront the pastor about this, and he shunned me. I confronted his mother, who was part of the church. I went to the church leaders, and I was one of the church leaders at the time, and I've been seeing too much already. And I've been seeing, you know, what I thought was evidence of him sleeping around with other women, you know, and they basically covered up for him. And now that I just got up and left because there was nothing I could do. I didn't have any hard evidence. I mean, they just basically said I was crazy, I was losing my mind, and, you know, they made it seem like I was the one making all this stuff up, and this is a 9-year-old child who has no reason to lie about anything. I mean, and then everybody else in the church knew he was sleeping with other women. They knew he had his eyes on, at that time, my wife. We were separated, and I mean, it was just sickening. It drove me absolutely insane. I'm still kind of upset about it. I guess I'm still getting help on that particular situation and various other aspects of the church situation. I mean, but it infuriates me that she still works for the church. She still works directly underneath him as the administrator of the church and condones his actions. She's let our daughter and her son know more or less by being complicit that this is okay. You can do this, and if you just pray about it, God will make it all right and all this other shit. So, me personally, I've taken the approach of I can only tell my daughter the truth when it becomes, you know, when she becomes of age where I can tell her that type of thing and she can understand it and really, you know, make sense out of it or explain it to her or whatever. But it's really sad, I mean, because it's a disenfranchisement for not only my ex-wife, their mother, but for that boy. I mean, her son.
Right.
Now, he gets to go into the world thinking that that's an okay thing to see and do and just, you know, comply with, and nobody's going to do anything. And I feel kind of stuck myself because what am I to do? I can't press charges. He didn't physically harm me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's a really messed up catch 22. So I just figured I'd share that. It's really hard to share that sometimes, but it's therapeutic at the same time to just kind of get it out. But I appreciate you letting me chime in.
Oh, yeah, definitely, Bayou. And the thing is thank you again for sharing that with us. And that type of behavior is, excuse me, indicative to, you know, again, the culture of abuse that, you know, we've been talking about, you know, over the past year in general, not just with this particular topic, but other things that, you know, we've tackled on the show. And that happens often, in which the pastor is allegedly counseling, you know, some of the women or men, whatever, in the church, and, you know, even the children, you know, so men, women, and children, because children are not necessarily excluded from that. And, you know, he takes advantage of the particular situation. And when your wife was talking to him and he was, quote-unquote, counseling her, she probably, you know, divulged, you know, a lot of, you know, sensitive information, exposed her vulnerabilities and her gullibilities. And he took advantage of that. And he took advantage to the point that, you know, he decided to, you know, pursue a physical relationship. Now, she's a grown woman and she relented, but, you know, it makes me wonder what was going through her head, because now, you know, she's the administrator at the church, and so she gets some respect in that regard. She has a job. I'm assuming he's paying her. You know,
yeah,
so, you know, she has a paycheck and, you know, she gets to have relations with, you know, the pastor, which, you know, puts her in a different category. You know, she's probably getting some semblance of respect that she didn't get outside of that, you know, particular, you know, situation there. But again,
not to cut you off, but here's what ultimately drove me out, because you brought this up earlier. He took he took that experience, internalized it, and then made it into a sermon. And he preached it while I was there, while he knew I was back in the back running his audio equipment. I'm running his sound on the day he decides that he wants to preach this sermon about deadbeat dad. And he turns around and basically creates this sermon trying to shun me. He couldn't really shun me because I'm an excellent father, and everybody else in the church knew it, but they knew he was trying to talk about me and a few other people in the church when really he was just projecting because he's an idiot.
Exactly. Oh, and that's why, you know, when I was talking earlier about, you know, that person becoming the center of attention, becoming the center of the sermon, you know, that's their way of saying, and then they will sit there and stand flat foot and dare you to say something about it. And when you stand up for yourself and tell them what they're doing is wrong, they, you know, they work their magic, if you will, and try to, you know, implement that groupthink, that mob mentality, to get everyone else in the church to turn on you. Because, you know, in that particular situation, you know, I guess he wanted you out the picture because that would give him more control over, you know, your ex-wife and the situation. And because you said something about it, you know, that made you the enemy. Because you spoke up. You're supposed to let go and let God, right? And you know, and judge not. And, you know, touch not mine anointed. I'm pretty sure he probably threw that on you, too.
They even laid hands on me and put oil and all that stuff. And, you know, we're going to shabak the devil out of you and all this other stuff. I'm like, okay.
You know, and it happens, you know, not to excuse the behavior, but, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's commonplace, if you will, in certain churches. And, you know, they'll especially go into that touch not mine anointed, meaning you're not supposed to say or do anything against that man of God. And, you know, I've had to break down, even though I don't believe in the doctrine and the dogma, I, you know, sometimes you have to deal with them at their level, if you will. And I went and I broke down that particular scripture to them to show them that they were definitely taking it out of context. So if you go back and you read that particular portion of the Bible, when it's talking about touch not mine anointed, it's talking about physical touch. It's not talking about speaking the truth to power. It's not talking about speaking the truth about an individual, and in this matter, the man or woman of God, if you will, because if that was the case, then when David talked about Saul, he should have been struck dead, or, you know, yep. God should have called down from the clouds. When Nathan talked about David, after David had perpetrated, you know, the different crimes in the Bible, then, you know, someone should have said, touch not mine anointed at that time. When Paul called Peter a hypocrite, you know, God should have called from the clouds and said,
when
but
Jesus,
that never happened.
When Jesus flipped the tables over in the synagogue and started, mm-hmm. you know, running with the cat of nine tails, why didn't thunder come from the sky then?
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, while I don't believe in the doctrine and the dogma and anything, but I'm like, if you're going to use the scriptures, use it in their correct context. You cannot use these scriptures to justify bad behavior, to justify mistreatment, to justify, you know, making someone else feel less than. You're trying to silence them, bully and manipulate them into silence, and that's happening across the board, not only just with them using that scripture, but just the different examples. You know, like that young lady, if something else ever happens in that household, in a dollar household, she's not going to come forward because she doesn't believe people are going to believe her.
Right.
She's going to feel like something is wrong with her. She thinks something is wrong with her that, you know, it not only skewered
her hope for Christians, but humanity. I mean, humans didn't come to her rescue. I mean, look at the police. I mean, they're not doing anything. They're making her the one that's, you know, that's the bad guy. It's crazy.
Exactly. And, you know, it happens. It happens all the time. You know, yeah, she's now the bad person because she told the pastor she should have just accepted her punishment. You know, and the thing is that when she was having the conversation with her dad and she got upset, she excused herself and walked into the kitchen away from everyone. He followed her into the kitchen. So he was being the bully. Again, you know, our code word for the day, he was being the bully. He followed her in there and, you know, asking her what was she upset about. Well, you just had a conversation. You know exactly what she's upset about.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, again, you know, I'm not sure what was happening at that time in their lives, but there's nothing that can justify, you know.
Oh, there's people that try to justify. They try to justify really well. I like one person said to me, oh, you know what? Jesus suffered, and, you know, it's like this game of who can get the most pain. They're going to get the best reward. That is insane. But I used to believe that. I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense, because if I suffer here in this life, in the next life, you know, oh, my goodness, I'm just going to have the greatest reward ever. You know, what could it be? You know, maybe I'm going to have three great wives, since this one was really deplorable. You know, I mean, I was thinking all kinds of insane things because I was under the guise of that particular religion, thinking that this is really going to work for me. All good things, you know, the Romans 8:28 verse, you know. It's really amazing how you can psychologically get tricked, or you can trick yourself into believing this crap.
Exactly. But see, this is the thing. Now that you know better, you do better, correct?
Oh, of course. Of course. I try to go even the furthest mile to show my daughter, who I'm really forthcoming with, look, you can be good without God. And we go and help the homeless. We do all kinds of things to try to help and show, look, you don't have to have God to do this. You know what I mean? It's just a way of trying to teach her to think for yourself. I don't want you to just believe just because daddy told you to believe it, or because your mom, she takes you to church every Sunday and they're forcing you to believe it. That will make me no better than the people that, you know, I'm opposed to. So, yes, I do try to do my very best to show in this life, because this is the only life I have. as far as I understand so far. If there's evidence that there's going to be another life, then I'm open to listen to it. But so far, none of them are convincing. So.
Exactly. But, I mean, that's good. You're taking her out and you're showing her compassion and showing her to have compassion for other people. And that's going to take her a long way because I believe that's one of the factors that is missing in, you know, quite a few people's lives because, you know, we just have to do better at understanding people where they are and accepting them, you know, where they are and moving on. But, we, another example of just some of the madness is up in Baltimore where that Hebrew Israelite guy killed that child because he thought that that child had gay tendencies. It was a little 4-year-old boy. And, you know, the boy's mother even helped to cover up the death of her own child. And then the Hebrew Israelite guy, he made them call him Lord, so Mr. Lord there. Basically, you know, his own mother and brother helped him to cover up that crime because the bodies of the little boy and another woman, he buried them in his mother's backyard. And they covered all of that. And, you know, again, another cult, another example of a cult. And, you know, what are we doing? What's happening? You know, these situations and things like this definitely, you know, need to be confronted. And we have to do better. But, again, we have to get out here and educate people and disseminate the information and to encourage people to come forth if they're, you know, victims and not to take it. And, again, in some cases with the women, we have to, you see all of this in politics now with this war on women. You know, many people don't realize if you educate and you equip a woman, you pretty much have equipped the entire family. And in some cases, they do not want women to get power or money because that would take the power away from men. You know, men in general own the majority of the resources. And many women will bow down and, you know, give in to certain demands because that particular man may have the money or, you know, the wealth or, you know, the power or whatever that she so craves. Or in some cases, she really doesn't have choices. I mean, there are so many different, you know, situations and instances there, so I can't really go into them all. But definitely we have to do better to empower women so that women can be independent and on their own so that when they're with someone, they, you know, they're with them for the right reasons, not because they need someone to take care of them or they need someone to help them raise their children or they need someone with, you know, benefits that can help them in certain areas of their lives. And, I mean, the same thing with men. There are some men in this situation because I've seen it, you know, especially within the past decade, these men, some of these men living on these women and the women are taking care of them and some of these men are giving in to some of the ways of the women because they have become accustomed to a certain lifestyle. You know, we have to do better across the board. We definitely, you know, we have to do better across the board. And, hey, we're getting there slowly but surely, you know, and by, you know, you called in and you told us about the situation there. I guess my question to you is, you know, what is your relationship with the ex now? Do you all get along?
We get along. I mean, it's really a lot of work on my part. I mean, it's really a lot of work on my part. Like last weekend, I have my daughter every other weekend, and I picked her up last weekend, and she said, well, Dad, I want to go to my brother's track meet. And this is a track meet that's sponsored by their church. So I was already leery of this because I don't like going back around those people because it just triggers emotions that I don't like really dealing with because I don't have a problem with telling people about, you know, what I believe. You know what I mean? But okay. I'd rather just do it when I'm asked as opposed to going around just advocating and waving the sign, hey, I don't believe, but the mother and I are cordial, a lot more cordial than we were probably about 4 years ago when, you know, our divorce took place. But I mean, it has its challenges because she chooses to act like, you know, nothing's wrong with her being around this pastor still, even though he's announced to the church He's no longer attracted to his wife. They're going through a divorce. So this is like a license for him to go ahead and just do what he's been doing with my ex-wife. You know, they're driving in the car together to the track meet. They leave the track meet during halftime and all this stuff. He comes up to me, tries to give me a pound, and it's just, it's really fake, you know, but I just got to just kind of swallow it up for my daughter, because if I react how I really want to react, he wins. You know what I mean? He wins.
Exactly. But see, I'm assuming in the end, you know, I'll just say, you know, does your wife think she's going to be the news first lady?
I think she does, but she knows she has a lot of competition. That's her problem too. That's another problem for her, is it's not just her that's being touted as a possible first lady. I don't think she'll ever get into the first lady stance, because she's always going to be seen as a whore. She's the pastor's whore. You know what I mean? So she could never
right.
be queen. That's she knows.
You know,
she can
always use the example of Rachel, but you know, it happens. And you know, another thing that I definitely want to point out to people that you know, and I'm pretty sure you've heard this from, you know, coming from the church circle. When you try to leave that church or you say something, you know, against some behavior, they'll tell you that other people who have spoken out against that pastor or other people that have left that church, they died terrible deaths or their lives turned for the worst and all of that. That is also, you know, a symptom of, you know, abuse, whether it's under, you know, Stockholm Syndrome or emotional abuse, because they're telling you if you go against the wishes of the pastor or you walk away from the pastor or you say anything, that God is going to punish you for saying something about him. These are just little tricks and things. Again,
yeah.
Talking about
and
Jedi mind tricks. Go ahead, dear.
No, I was just saying, yeah, those are pretty deep anecdotes that they use.
Yeah, and it happens all the time, you know, and you know, they're not going to do anything. They're going to leave it in God's hands. And, you know, and then they turn around and wish for, you know, God to hurt you in some kind of way. It's just, it's amazing. You know, but there are so many different examples we can give out there that's happening, you know, in the community, not just the religious community, but, you know, just the community at large, because, you know, again, psychological warfare, if you can get into someone's head, and if you can control them, you know, emotionally and psychologically, you pretty much can control the person. And that's
yep.
the reason why it's very, very important that people understand situations that they're going into and that they understand the people that they're serving under or what have you. And, you know, the example that you gave, you know, today with, you know, the ex and all of that with her, you know, I believe that's the only reason why she probably succumbed to, you know, the pastor, with the hopes of one day becoming the first lady, because as she shared some of her information, I'm sure he shared some of his as well.
Oh,
but,
yeah, he has.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, you know, there's always two sides to a story. But, of course, they want to believe what he had to say, because he's the man of God. So, I mean, it's just, it's interesting. But, you know, it goes back to, you know, what we were saying earlier. We have to do better. And, you know, again, we have to stop projecting the blame from the abuser and projecting it on the victim. That's wrong. And I've seen
right.
that in a lot of different environments, not just religious environments. You know, I've seen it outside of the religious environment. And also, we need to talk about this groupthink and this mob mentality. If you have one person upset with an individual, why is it that now all of a sudden that entire clique is upset with that particular individual? We have to grow. We have to get better. We have to do better than that. And it's just, it's interesting seeing all of this. But again, vocalizing the dissatisfaction means that we have to do something about it. So, you know, us as the Free Thought community, you know, there are some programs out there, you know, again, Freedom from Religion and Recovering from Religion, those are two programs that I definitely support. And there's a therapy project that they're working on, and it should be live really soon. What they're doing now is they are gathering therapists that can help people in the secular community, and that is a wonderful program, and I believe it's going to be extremely successful because, you know, again, you have the Christian counseling industry out there. And, you know, they found a way to monetize it. And that's the reason why I keep telling you guys, pay attention to what's happening. And, you know, we need to grow. We need to grow. But, yeah, you all check that out for the Project Therapy. I'll post it on my wall sometime this week so that people can get the link again. I've linked it up a couple of times, but I'll, you know, try to be more diligent in posting that. And we can also be heard on Free Thought Radio as well, just to kind of let you guys know. But, yeah, so, I mean, it's just interesting. You know, I'm still laughing about earlier when we were talking about the crazy uncle. I think we all have a crazy uncle that we know better than the lead kids. But, you know, it's just, it's interesting, the whole thing. And, again, with that young lady, Crystal's daughter, we definitely support her, and we want to let her know that there are people out here that do believe her, and we want nothing but the best for her. And I'm just hoping that when she gets of age and, you know, when she goes off to college, that she'll be able to get the help that she needs, because right now, I don't believe Creflo is going to let her go see any counselor with the possibility of any of the information that she has, you know, getting out. That's just not going to happen. So, you know, it's just, it's interesting. It's interesting. But, you know, as we were talking earlier, you know, going back to cyberbullying, you know, and again, cyberbullying is defined as using the internet and related technology to harm other people in a deliberate, repeated, and hostile manner. And, you know, it says here it's become common in society, especially among young people. No, I've seen some old folks out there, you know, with a passive-aggressive behavior. And, again, you know, these are some of the same people that want to turn around and point the finger at these young people, saying, I don't know why they're acting like that. I don't know where they're getting that from. They're getting it from you. They're getting it from you. We need to talk about, you know, these entitlement, you know, issues that some people have and, you know, talk about being self-centered, self-absorbed, because, you know, of course, everything, the whole world revolves around you and your issues, you and your opinions, you and your definition of the facts. It doesn't matter if the facts, you know, are different, you know, from another source, but yours are the only ones that matter. So, you know, again, we need to work on these things. We need to get better at it. And, you know, as time goes on and we educate ourselves, you know, we can educate other people, and it definitely, definitely gets better. So, you know, on that note, you know, we're going to start winding it down, but it's just, it's interesting. It's just, wow. You know, we just need to do better. You know, the psychological abuse that's going on out here, it really does have long-term effect. And if people will tell you that it doesn't, they're lying to you, or maybe they're the bully. Maybe they're the ones, you know, perpetrating, you know, the abuse, because, you know, there are people out here dealing with anxiety, dealing with, you know, depression, in some cases post-traumatic stress disorder. If you were raised in a household in which the, you know, the parental figure was overly critical of everything that you did, there was nothing that you could do that was right, that, you know, they were extremely dominant, verbally aggressive, you know, it does have a long-term effect. You know, like I said, many of us are still dealing with the after effects of issues that occurred in childhood. So we just have to do better. You know, we're getting there slowly but surely. And, again, you know, with them cutting, you know, some of these programs, is making it harder to get the help that you need. But, again, going back to the health care law that was passed, and hopefully the Supreme Court will not strike it down, but, you know, they're believing that the Supreme Court will strike down sections of it. But it's imperative that, you know, that health care bill remains intact, because then people will be able to get the physical and mental health care that they need. And, again, you know, that helps in so many different ways. Again, we shouldn't have people continuing to die from, you know, high blood pressure and diabetes, when many of these things in some cases are preventable, but they're also treatable. So, again, we can do better. We're doing better one step at a time. And, you know, we thank you all for, you know, coming to the show today, being supportive, and, This is Kim from Black Freethinkers. You can reach me at blackfreethinkers@gmail.com. My information is on the Blog Talk Radio profile page as well as my Facebook page and all of that. But there are a lot of great things to come this year. Next Saturday, Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, we will be participating in the Greater Chicago Food Depository Hunger Walk. This is the 27th annual walk, and again, for those of you who are interested in donating, I'm asking that you donate directly to the Greater Chicago Food Depository. I want the money to go directly to them. You can tell or indicate that it came for Black Nonbelievers of Chicago. We've made a pledge, and registration is at 7 a.m. for those who would like to walk with us. We do have a team. I registered us as a team. And also, Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, we will be marching in the Bud Billiken Parade in August. So more information to come from that. But just to let you know that we definitely are getting out in the community. We're volunteering, getting to know people. The group is growing, is continuing to grow. We just started the group in January of this year, and we're already up to like 75 people on Meetup, and then it's about 20 other people that aren't signed up on a Meetup group. So we're getting there slowly but surely. We're growing. We're getting there. And, I think everyone. Raina? So, yeah, no, we definitely, we're getting there slowly but surely. And I would just like to thank everyone who has been supportive of us. And on that note, I would like to tell you all to have a lovely, lovely weekend. And thank you to everyone in the chat room. Thank you to everyone listening and everyone who's going to listen to the archives. You all have a wonderful weekend. And, again, this is Black Freethinkers, and we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. Take care, everybody.
Take care. Have a good weekend.